Mics are live.
Good morning, everyone. It is 10:06 a.m., April 16th, 2018. This is a work session on case number PU-17-238, which is about a proposed economic development tariff for Otter Tail Power. We had an informal hearing on this on February 26th and are following up now with this work session. I don't have any opening comments. This is Commissioner Karasius's portfolio, so I'll ask you, Commissioner Fedorchak, if you have any opening comments before we turn it over to Brian.
I don't have any opening comments.
Okay. With us at the table, there is a representative of Otter Tail Power and a representative of advocacy staff here, but with us as advisory staff are Patrick Fawn and Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, and manning the controls for the electronics is Steve Call. Commissioner Karasius.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Well, I'll just jump right into it. The purpose, at least for myself, and I think these are a couple of common questions we have to answer. One, determining whether or not this should or shouldn't roll into the rate case or to treat it separately. I just wanted confirmation on that so we're all on the same page, or at least have a discussion related to that. And then the other part would be, one of my concerns on this would be how it relates to Greenfield customers, particularly Greenfield customers that could potentially be involved or would be involved in a TIA case. And I'm not terribly eager to have the economic development rate extended to a customer in order to attract business. And I think during the informal, as we were having the conversation on it, about that issue in particular, it wasn't a definitive no, it would never be used. It was more, it would rarely be used. And that was a concern of mine, and I just wanted to have a discussion related to that. So, and I believe there is one other issue that is pending as well, but I'll let either Pat or Alana take it from there. So, Pat, are you up?
Sure. I imagine there may be more than a couple pending issues, depending on what the commissioner's questions are about this tariff. But the one that I've been hearing most about is the question and how it relates to how this kind of an economic development rate offered to customers outside of the company's service area would impact a TIA case, for example. It seems like it's the major issue, but there may be others.
No,
that's the primary issue, I thought. Yeah, the major concern with this tariff, but there may be other concerns on how it might impact the rate case in the future.
Okay. Was there more? It sounds like mine.
Smaller things. You know, for myself personally, one would be how this ultimately is tracked, and would we, you know, I think in terms of business being able to go out and do their job, I don't want to be hovering over a business, but at the same time, I don't want to wait until the next rate case comes in either, I think it's just confirming for me that the structure is definitive enough that the parameters are clearly understood by both parties, and then it really becomes a non-issue in that sense. Mm-hmm. So that I wouldn't call it the biggest issue for me. It's really about the service territory, and I like the concept of an economic development rider. I think when communities are trying to attract business, it takes more than one entity. Local government may work with that company to attract them. Utility companies may do things to help attract that business into a community or an area. So I like the concept. I think it makes sense. But for our purposes, I don't want it to become a lever in a territorial dispute either.
I don't want that also, but I'm going to differ just slightly. I'm not even a fan of the whole concept, because whether it's true or not, I just think when these things are done, it leads to the perception out there that there's discriminatory prices going on, and people feel like, well, why did they get it? Why didn't I get it? And it just leads to a lot of problems, and kind of tells me that we didn't get our rate schedule very well done when rates were last approved, if these things are needed. Or else we should be able to be competitive to attract new customers in.
Well, duly noted, I certainly understand that. But we also have to remember it's a competitive world out there. And if a business could be in North Dakota or another state or another state, our actions aren't going to prevent another state from putting a better package together to attract business. If it was a constant and no one else changed what they were doing, but it's, you know, I've gone through it firsthand, and sometimes you have to really work hard to earn the business, and it's not a long term. I think this can go up to, is it 5 years, if I remember correctly? So it's not a forever thing, and yeah, I get it. I do. It's kind of like, you know, if you go and you buy a vehicle, and then although, you know what, I'm not this really to digress. I've never bought a new vehicle. We were just talking about that this weekend. I need to try that sometime. But say you were going out and you bought a new vehicle, and you pay X amount, and then someone a week later goes and buys the same vehicle, and they get another couple added incentives. It's kind of the world we live in where things are changing. And the company really has to deal with it, too, and explain it to their customer base on, well, why is so-and-so getting a better price? But long term, if it helps everyone, because it's helping to increase the revenue stream, and it spreads cost out over a wider base, it does have a long term benefit as well. So I see it both ways. I understand that you always hate to find out someone got a better deal than you, but I think what the company's looking at is being selective and really using it as a tool to try and draw business in that they wouldn't get otherwise. Because that's just a bad business decision to say, well, we'll give a discount even though we really don't have to. They're coming anyway. I wouldn't do that. But
if this would be a good time, I have a couple, two or three questions for staff that I was left confused with after our informal. So if that's all right with you, I'd throw those out now.
Absolutely.
Okay, First of all, in the case of a different IOU that has an economic development tariff available to it, I believe part of that is that when they offer it, they have to come to the commission to get it approved, because I recall us approving one. Is that the case here, or is this proposal to just have a tariff and they can set whatever they want?
As far as other utility companies coming to the commission for approval of an economic development, MDU is the only one that still has economic development rider, I believe. And they do not, I'd have to look a little closer, but I believe they have to come to us for approval of their contract.
And so does this request have that same stipulation, or is that missing from this request?
I think it's in there, and I didn't realize that, but it may have been the revised version. I just checked that. That it now has to be approved.
I wasn't certain, right, based on this language. I could read it another way.
I didn't read it that closely, I just got it.
That's one thing that I think we need to answer before we would come to a final conclusion.
I wanted to say on the contracts, though, that you don't need specific tariff language anywhere in a regular tariff or in a rider in order to come in and ask for a contract to be approved. Mm-hmm. A company can compete and figure out these same things. You know, it's non-discriminatory, it's not below cost, but we think we can do it for X, Y, Z. We can try to attract this customer and come into the commission and ask for approval of that particular situation. We have many instances of that without tariff language. Correct, Pat?
That's correct.
So it's not impossible to do what you're saying without changing anything in the current tariff. It just takes the company, you know, coming in and asking.
Is that what they meant by they wanted certainty, or they actually talked about the certainty quite a lot, but I think it was more in regards to a potential TIA, so that they were trying to say that we think this would conflict or create TIA issues because the goal is to create certainty, and that is like the most uncertain thing that you could possibly enter into, so we didn't think that that would be an issue. But are they looking for, here's the ground rules, and like we can just run with this and not have to seek our approval? Because I don't see anything in the tariff language that calls for our approval, but...
Oh, wait, I read here it is. The nature of this rider requires commission approval of the rate discount offered to the customer. The final offered rate shall be calculated by the company using its proprietary pricing model and produce net benefits to ratepayers.
So I assume they're going to do their calculation, going to come in, Vic's going to do it again and double check it, and you're going to say yes or no. Is that what it says?
It is. Okay. And I was just looking for it too, but
it's in their filing of November 27th, on the second page. No, I don't know if this has been revised since. Has this been revised, Vic?
In their tariff, it says, the nature of this rider requires a pre-approved rate process from the commission in order for the company to respond to potential business opportunities.
So that's approving the process.
Approving the process. And then, I don't know,
November 27th says rate discount. Under the title process, it says approve rate discount, so I don't know either. Maybe it can be better worded.
There's commission approval of the rate discount offered to the customer. Offered to the customer. So that's not just like some general rate discount that they can offer to everybody. It sounds like it's on a case-by-case basis.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, again, perhaps could be better worded. I was just reading that November 27th filing. I've got the red jacket if you want it. But, again, I think it could be better worded. But also, they could come in here tomorrow with the proprietary calculation and all the facts and say, this is what we'd like to offer these people.
So I guess knowing that, and I wish we had had that discussion in our informal when the company was at the table, too, to ask them what is different about this than that. Because that, to me, seems the same. If they have to come here anyway to get their rate approved, the rate discount approved, then how does this rider or this tariff give them a faster track to getting something tangible that they can offer to a customer? Because that's what they want, right? They want something that they know that they can offer this customer.
Well, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but if you pass the tariff one way or the other, the process, I think the model is probably pre-approved. You know, so if they hadn't done that, you know, when they first came in, maybe the first one, you'd be looking at the model and at the facts that go into the model, and that might take a little longer. The second one, it's like, well, the model was good last time, so it's probably still good this time, and you're probably in the equal.
Well, and it probably helps if I'm again remembering correctly, I think that they are trying to have something on the books that maybe out-of-state companies can look at, see there, and see, oh, there's a discount available. We might be able to qualify for that. Whereas if it's just the contract negotiation, they might just say, oh, they've got no tools in their tariffs to give us a discount. We're not interested.
Right.
So to Randy's point about the having the lowest possible rates and not having kind of one-off arrangements that might provide some hard feelings between customers or misunderstandings. Help me. I'm trying to understand the company's position on that, too. Is it that there are certain, like, so rate design by its nature is, even when you break it down into the various classes, is somewhat of a one-size-fits-all within that class. And there might be opportunities within a class for certain customers to provide a little bit lower rate that still recovers their costs and doesn't come out as a net loss to any other customers. So this would be a tool that would allow them to do that. Versus, and so I'm thinking from a principle or philosophy standpoint, versus like your one-size-fits-all rate within that class that generally makes the rates, that class contribute to the system as appropriately, but within it, there could be customers that could pay a lesser rate and still contribute their fair share to the system. Is that what this does?
You're the rate man.
If you have a class that is a group of customers and there are customers within that class that really deserve a different rate, then that's a reason to come up with a new class.
Yeah.
That's a reason.
What if it's one customer?
If it's one customer today, there might be another customer that comes along tomorrow. They would know that they can get a service under that new class rate. That's how you try to protect from discrimination.
Okay.
So a customer with the same characteristics can get the same rate.
So what I said is not a good argument for this approach.
Well, I think a solution, I mean, to what you were saying is to develop a different customer class. And because it's so, that customer is so different from the others in the class, or this type of customer is so different mm-hmm. from the others in the class.
And the hard part is figuring out what those characteristics are that would make that new class and making sure you've covered them. But that's the part that makes it equally applicable then to everybody similarly situated.
Would this be a step towards that? Say you started, like you curated this other customer with this and you have a different rate for them, then is that the beginnings of a new rate class?
Well, I think what you're doing under this, though, and what their proposal is, you're treating each customer differently.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could be.
You could be.
No.
You're not grouping them into a class that, for another customer to get the same rate, they would have to be exactly the same. Not similar, but exactly the same in order to get the same rate. So you're discriminating on a customer-to-customer basis, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Can a rate class have to do with timing? Like, this required a new load of half a megawatt or a megawatt or whatever the level was. And so if you create a new class for this new business that's coming in, and they're going to add that level of load to the company. So you create that class for them, but it's just because they're new and for 5 years, does that mean then that any other business with the same characteristics has to get that now for the next 5 years too? Or the fact that it's a different timing in their business life
it's
different.
If it's a new, if you're developing a rate for a, in a contract, let's say, because we've said that you can file an individual contract, typically what we do is that we make sure that those contracts are known to the public, and so a new company looking to come in would be able to look and say, see this contract and say, oh, they got this rate, and I want that rate, and they should be able to come to the commission and, you know, the company should offer them that rate. And if they didn't, then there's grounds for us to look at why they are treating these two customers differently.
But the fact that one is new and one is existing, is that a good reason to treat them differently? Maybe not a good reason, but an acceptable reason?
I guess I don't think so. I mean, I think it's the load. So you,
yeah.
I mean, if you had a customer of a certain load, new, and you had an equal load characteristics, let's say, of existing, they should be paying the same.
But there may be new technologies too, mm-hmm, that would reduce a rate to an individual customer. So, but if another customer came along with those same technology advantages, that customer would.
What do you mean by that? New technologies? Help me understand what you're thinking.
Well, maybe load control technologies that
the
would,
company, the new customer has.
Right. That would place them on the system at times when off peak.
I see.
And another customer comes along and has the same technology benefits, and they would be able to receive the same rate.
Or the existing, I think Randy's concern, it seems like, is
existing versus new
customers.
Yeah, or existing versus new, right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, that isn't one of the factors in determining rates for rate classes.
A new
it
person.
Hasn't been, right?
Yeah.
I think we have to remember as well that we're not talking about a neighborhood where you have a house and then the next door neighbor all of a sudden decides to put an addition on their house and they get lower utility rates because they're adding on. I think in the business community, this isn't unusual at all. In fact, it happens all the time. And it's not a surprise. And if you went to any business and said, does this surprise you? They'd say no. They might say, hey, I want the rate though. That looks like a nice rate. Yeah. I'd like that. But I just don't think this is a terribly unusual scenario to have an incentive for expanding or bringing a new business into, mm-hmm, the area. So, yeah, I think you have to measure it out that, maybe a little bit differently.
Well, I think that the company's brought this economic development rider to the commission, and they're saying, you know, so the commission is going to wonder, well, who pays for this? You know, do we want to approve this if the customer, the rest of the customers pay for it?
I think
so. But we already have said that they aren't going to. I mean, that's clear in there.
That's key to make that.
So what more can be said in the tariff language to assure that that's not the goal here, is to give one customer a break and make the customers pay for it? I think that's clear and established in the words of the tariff, and that would be up to us to make sure when they apply and we calculate it and look over their numbers that they're doing that.
Yep.
But let me ask a question on that, and I'm going to make an extreme case to the philosophical point. Let's say the company had a whole bunch of these out there, and it was hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars that are being provided to a bunch of people in their first 5 years. Now a rate case comes in. We have the obligation of making sure that company is healthy. And if they have given away too much and there's not the revenues coming in order to keep them healthy, What are our alternatives other than to raise the rates on the other customers?
Well, I think the language is really, for me, it's pretty clear that they can't do it below cost, and they can't do it in such a way that other customers are subsidizing that rate. So they're not going to compromise their financial position because they're not losing money. They're at least making a little, and it's not falling on the backs of other ratepayers. I mean, those two elements are key.
Well, and the third piece is we'd be approving each one of them, so we wouldn't hopefully get into a situation where we approved too many.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that gives a great level of protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, as the two people sitting in the room who have been through this for way too many years, cost is often in the eye of the beholder, and it can include a lot of things, and it can exclude a lot of things. And your point, Commissioner Chrisman, I'm not advocating for or against having this. I've just heard these arguments before. But the flip side of your point is that if they're not in trouble and they can afford having a gazillion of these out there and we come to a rate case, they've been getting way too much money from everybody else for a whole long time. You know, so that's the constant dilemma. And I think the question is in how they're figuring out cost, which is the proprietary thing. Victor obviously has looked at it. I don't know that we had any comments from anybody when the notice went out or anybody to look at it. But I think that's the key, and that's where you have to feel comfortable with whatever the analysis is. The statutes, you know, do allow discrimination, reasonable business type discrimination, but the difference, Commissioner Krosh, is with what you were describing is that this is still a monopoly, and all the other businesses you're talking about that are out there are not. And so there's a little bit of extra hurdle to get over.
Could we talk a little bit, and maybe this isn't the time, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on what we would gain by folding this into the rate case versus just making a decision on our separately. And if there's any thoughts as to why the company didn't just include it in the rate case.
Well, I kind of asked them that, and they said, and he can wave at me if this is wrong, but they just wanted to be able to move this along a little quicker than the rate case. It seemed like an emergency clause. Yeah. But I don't know that you'd gain much, but you do have interveners, and so you might get their perspective. I don't know if they were out there paying attention to this filing and thinking they should necessarily worry about this filing, but if you ask the question specifically when you're sitting at the hearing, you might get their perspective, all of whom are out there competing in other businesses.
So that would be one benefit of folding it in, getting a little bit more input.
I mean, rate cases are the time and place to do all rate-related things.
Yeah.
And so it's a little odd that the rate case came in and then this side filing came in. But
Pat, do
companies
you
have done odder things.
Well, I think there's... If you had it in the rate case, you'd have the opportunity to get more information about the filing. But there's another way to do it, too, if you didn't want to wait to have, if you have unanswered questions, have another informal session with the company.
Sure.
Or have us write them a letter and ask those questions to both sides, staff and the company.
So if these were folded into a rate case, and this was their best available rate, let's call it. So they've got the economic development incentive rate. At that point in time, they don't have to come to us for pre-approval, correct, if it's a part of the rate case?
And no, the pre-approval of each contract, I would assume,
would still stick
because they'd still have. Just because it's in the rate case doesn't mean there won't be tariff language, doesn't mean it can't be a rider, and it doesn't mean it can't be, you know, required approval. It's just that you're looking at the question along with all of the other questions that are involved in a rate case. I mean, in an extreme example, if the rate case results in a lot of changes to these numbers they're putting into this formula, because this is disallowed and that's disallowed and the cost of capital is different and all. So all of the 58 numbers that go into the formula, if the rate case changed all of them, it might not even be a good formula anymore. You know, it might not even work for economic development rates. I don't know, but hypothetically that's a possibility.
I think you said if it were a rider, and am I misunderstanding something? I presume this whole concept would have to be a rider, because even if it requires our pre-approval of the contract, if it's not done on a rider, then we'd have to, when we do the pre-approval, we'd have to do a whole new rate case.
No, I think MDUs is regular tariff language. Victor, nod at me. Regular tariff language that says we're bringing these, when we get one of these, we're bringing them into the commission.
And so that's it. We change that tariff without a...
Yeah. Okay. Well, the rate's not in the tariff. The rate's in the contract, the price that the customer's going to pay. Okay. But the tariff says bring the contract in.
Thank you.
I do want to make a comment on the TIA when it's time to go there, if I may.
I'm ready.
I apologize, but I didn't even really realize here to the last minute that there was advocacy staff, but neither did Victor before, so I'm not feel too bad. So I wasn't aware of the conversation about the TIA, but this is a rate issue, and the TIA is not a rate issue in any way, shape, or form. And so my advice to you is to keep them 110% separated and do not try to tie rate issues into the TIA. It would be discrimination if you have two equal customers, one within the city limits and one just down the road that would require a TIA, and they could not get the same rate. So I'm just saying...
From the same company.
Don't go there, yeah.
How's that any more discriminatory than if they can't get the same company?
Well, that, again, is, it might not be any more or less discriminatory, but it's the legislative policy decision that they can't choose that company, you know. But I'm just talking about those laws that exist today. As Pat was describing how rates are made, you want every customer similarly situated. They're entitled to the same rate, and the rate should be fair. And so if you somehow tie this rate, and the question you have to answer is how to get to the right rate, and if it's possible in this kind of a case. And if you tie that to the issues in the TIA, that's all about whether public convenience requires them to extend service out there. The rate is it's a part of it because of return and everything, but the rate the customer's paying is not the controlling question there. So I just think, in my mind, that I don't know how Pat feels about this, but they are night and day different. So if you want more time to think about it and we can talk individually, that's good. Don't decide today.
I agree. I mean, they're certainly different. And customer preference is not a controlling issue in a TIA case. However, customer preference is driven by rate.
I know. I understand that completely.
In a very big way.
Yes.
Yeah.
I understand that completely.
I've already seen that. So I can't imagine it wouldn't be more of an issue when there's a tool out there to provide a more attractive rate.
Yeah. And, again, if Otter Tail is entitled to charge the rate, whatever you figure out that it ought to be here, then they're entitled to charge it to whoever qualifies for it. That's all I can say. I just think you're really going to dig yourself into a very deep hole if you try to tie the two together, because the issues are different. Mm. Jump in anytime.
Well, I like keeping issues separate. That's... That's helpful
so
to keep.
Would we dig that hole after the fact if they came in with this and said we're pitching, want to pitch this to a customer, and we look at it and, well, that customer is not within your service territory, and then we're into this rate weaving its way into a potentially a TIA case, and then at which point in time if we, well, I won't go any further. But.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and it's almost going to be which comes first. Are they going to come in for the PCNN first when they can't promise the customer that rate? Are they going to come in for the rate first, which then makes them more attractive if you give it to them when they get to the PCNN? That's an issue, but that will have to be very delicately and slowly worked out if it ever arises.
Would they be able to come in and request the rate for a customer that's not in their territory?
If they, I mean, they're going to be sitting at this table saying we're filing for a PCNN tomorrow, but we want to talk about this today, and then they'll give you some reasons why, and you'll figure out if it's a good idea or a bad idea to do it that way. I mean, I realize it's awkward, which may be the natural way to limit how it gets extended.
I mean, pretty clearly they will, because when we discussed it in the informal, they were adamant that it needed to be for people both inside and outside of their service area. That's
well, I think you've got a huge equal protection and discrimination argument if you try to limit it, because you're not, your question here is not whether economic development things are good or bad. That's not your question. Your question is whether right, legitimate, fair, and reasonable rates. It's your only question. And you can't say, well, here they're this, but over there there's something else. It's impossible. Unless there's a cost, there's the whole cost thing, and that should be entering into what are the right rates.
So if you couldn't say over here they're this, and over there, before you even entertain what the rate might be, you need to go through the process of making sure that your public convenience and necessity is served by you even serving that customer.
Well, that's, yes, you might have.
I mean,
yeah, because you're not even entitled to serve them.
Right.
So after that.
If you're comfortable with the rate that you establish for this type of customer, like what Alana's saying is it doesn't matter where the customer is, except under the TIA, of course, but it doesn't matter where the customer is, this new customer falls under this rate. If that's a rate that you've approved, then it wouldn't be an issue in a TIA case.
Right. I mean, if you
well, we hadn't if you approved had, the rate.
Well, if you had your classes right, I mean, Pat's kind of talking, if
that's
you get them figured out, then that customer knows he's going
to
be entitled to it. He or she is going to be entitled to it when and if they ever get a PCNN.
So when the economic development rates are being requested and we're being assured that it does not impact other customers, the impacts will be on the investors. If they use it outside of their service area and get that load, is that certainly has an impact on the customers of the competitor, though, doesn't it? And so if we're going to allow it out there, then that kind of flies in the face of the argument they're making here that it is not going to affect other customers.
Because there, the co-op, let's say, is losing a potential load growth.
Right.
And load growth is good for everybody. I mean, that's why it comes full circle with these economic developments saying we're not going to impact anybody, because if you get a good customer and if they have a good load profile and if you've been able to grow your system, it should be good for everybody. It should not impact anybody. It should be good for everybody. And I understand that it should be good for the co-op if they got that new customer also. Again, we don't get involved in their rates. Co-op customers are paying X amount before the new customer, and they're going to keep paying X amount without the new customer. And we don't we don't get involved in what that is or worry about it. They're all really good questions you're raising.
Are there more? I'll fill a little time here. I have one that's only partial. I don't know if it's even really associated with this, but I left with a misunderstanding the other day, and I feel bad bringing it up now because Jerry's not here, but I think he and I were talking about different things. And so I just want to be clear. When... I was talking about service areas, or at least that's what I meant. Maybe I said franchise areas, but I was thinking of service areas, and his response was something to the effect that there's nothing stopping the co-ops from entering into franchised areas. And so, now I want to be clear, I'm not talking about franchise, I'm talking about the service areas that we have drawn around IOUs, and in my time here, we, and it's a different company, so I think it makes a good example to use here, but we altered service areas around four cities. Part of that is in the city limits, and some of it was outside of the city limits. I think those two companies kind of came with to an agreement on where each of their growth was going to be around those cities. So my understanding of that now is the areas that were given to the co-op in that case, if the customer and the IOU wants to serve there, they need to come here to get a certificate from us to serve that area, to change that area that we agreed to. And so I just want to be clear, I'm thinking that the same applies to the co-op if they want to go into that service area that we agreed was for the investor-owned utility, they would need to come to us to get approval for that as well, would they not?
Well, I don't exactly know the answer to your question, but I know a couple things. The co-op doesn't need to come get permission for anything except to approve those service area agreements. And if they wanted to change one of those to carve out a new customer that was going to Otter Tail or something, they would come back to us to get approval of that. But when you were in my office and you talked about them coming like into a city or a franchised area that's a monopoly authority to an investor-owned, I don't exactly know. I was going to look up the language because I thought it might be helpful, but the book's missing. Somebody's hauled it off to his or her desk. Maybe me. I'll have to look.
I have it.
Do you? Okay. Well, see, if you'd have kept your, if commissioners would have just kept a set of statutes in their office, we wouldn't have to haul this one off. Okay.
I have it.
Anyway, you know, whether a co-op, I know we've had a co-op enter into city areas to serve themselves, like their headquarters is in the middle of a town that's an investor-owned serve, but the co-op was serving itself in the middle of the town, okay? So I know that they can do that. Whether they could pick off a customer without retail wheeling, because retail wheeling is not allowed, and we have several legal opinions to that effect, but if they wanted to build, or they're right next door to the edge, and they can just hook up or something at the end of the yard, I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's probably yes. But that's a question you could ask the parties to respond to in writing. And then we would have the benefit of the legal minds of advocacy staff and Otter Tail.
But what was the point of drawing those lines then,
right,
if the part that we drew into the IOU's service area, if the co-op can go in there and take them anyway?
Well,
without us changing the boundary.
If in a service area agreement situation, you would change the boundary because you have two parties to a contract, and either one's going to violate the contract, in which case they violated the contract, the other one's going to be suing them, or they're going to be coming to you to change the contract. But in a situation where there is no service area agreement, okay, you have a monopoly.
Yeah.
And the statute talks about the corporate of the city and stuff, so that's why I have to go back and read it. I have a feeling that it's preserved up to a certain point in time. The disputes are always in the growth areas around the cities, you know. So
like, there's not service area agreements around probably, I don't know, Devil's Lake or some of the Rugby, maybe, some of the smaller towns. I don't know.
I don't have them all.
That are served by IOUs.
There's not there a isn't lot of service. There's just a handful of service area agreements.
Yeah.
And so I don't know exactly where they all are.
Okay.
We should have a map, though. We should. That's something we should develop, something handy so we could check at a glance. Jerry may have memorized. I don't know.
We have all the, you know, we have the case numbers.
Yeah.
Cases that we can look in and see maps for each individual agreement. And those could be.
There aren't a huge number of them.
It would require manual digitizing.
Yeah. Sounds like a project for an intern in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I were to be deciding today, just because it's there's a fair amount to think about in this, I would vote to fold it into the rate case. That's, you know, we're coming up on the dates for testimony to be provided and rebuttal testimony, and I don't know. It would be.
Well, the information already existing here and the informal record and stuff could be made a part of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the company's interest, but at the same time, they did say in the informal that they don't anticipate a lot of these. So, unless there's one that's just out there right now, in which case they could bring forward the contract basis, like you've suggested, until we get this all worked out.
Is there anything pivoting about having this as part of the rate case in terms of how the company operates long term versus as a rider, having it as a rider?
It's not a rider.
Well,
it's a tariff.
Then.
It's a new tariff, which would be added if we approved it now, or if we...
They call it a rider.
But it's called an economic
yeah. Yeah. That doesn't rider, make sense at all. Rider?
Well, it's a deviation from the tariff for that class of customer.
But a rider is something separate on a bill, isn't it?
Usually.
Yeah.
We think
it doesn't
of it
have
as
to
a,
be, but...
Yeah. We think of it as a separate charge.
Yeah.
Part of me likes having it in the rate case, but part of me thinks, too, the MDU one was old. When that case came up, I was surprised that I didn't even know that that was a possibility. And so I don't know how many years have gone by since the commission has addressed whether we want these economic development tariffs or riders out there in the first place. And so maybe we ought to be reaching a decision on it, designing something, because I'd say whatever we allow here, someone else will probably be applying for as well, something similar. And maybe we ought to look at this as a separate thing and design something of what we want to allow out there, as opposed to what could potentially end up being part of a big settlement, and then, you know, you wish some parts were different, but you like other parts, and so you accept them. And so part of me does want to keep it separate.
The only problem is we don't have as much access to information
that's,
through this
that's
process.
Negative.
And so if we're designing something that's going to be a precedent for everything else, blah, 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 I think that argues even more for doing it in the right case, because we'll have a lot more access to other opinions and input on the impact of this and how best to do it if we're going
except
to.
If we're not exact, if there are parts of this that we wish were a little different, would we nix a whole rate case settlement over it?
Well, we might be able to make that clearer, though, through our questioning and through our comments in our work sessions when we work through everything, that if we've got strong feelings about it, then advocacy staff should know that so that they can make those part of a settlement.
I want to circle back to my question, though. So you're not off the hook, Pat.
Okay.
is there, what are the pros and cons of having it
as a part of the rate case versus having it separate?
Well, we've been hearing some of them. I agree with some of the, you know, the what's been said. You can, if you have it in a rate case, you can weigh those, you can weigh that proposal along with all the other proposals that are in the rate case.
Sure.
But I also agree with Commissioner Christman, is if you are thinking about, in general, what does the commission think about economic development riders or economic development rates, then I would say that would be a reason not to have it in a specific company's rate case.
That would be a reason to do rules.
That would be a reason to do rules, yeah.
So everybody right. knows what the you know, ground rules are. But that's not to say you can't do both. I mean, they have asked a question, and you need to answer their question one way or another.
Rules for what now, Lana?
That's for
a different process.
Well, I don't know that necessarily that I think this has to be done, but if you wanted to be thinking about economic development, like specialty rates, okay, and you had certain things you wanted to apply to everybody, and you had certain like policy provisions or whatever, like you always want the contract to be approved or something like that, you put those in a rule, and then everybody knows up front, every company, if I think I want to maybe work on this, I start with these rules, and then I develop my specifics conforming to those rules. You don't put rates in it or anything like that. I mean, the company's still free to make it personalized. But that's what I was hearing Commissioner Christman say, like working right. through some of these things that you want everybody to do, you'd put those in rules. Okay, you wouldn't have a proceeding to apply to everybody and not make it a rule. Okay,
yeah.
I tend to think that a company is going to, you know, knows its business better than we ever will, and will, if it needs something, it sees some kind of a need out there in its territory, it's going to put together a package and bring it in, and it may not be just like the other companies.
Yeah.
It may not need to be just like the other companies.
Well, I agree with that, and that's why I think it would be best to do it through the rate case so we can get the full discussion of the issues, and we can ask of the interveners, some of which are industrial-type customers who might be the type that would be seeking this kind of a rate, to get some of their experience and insights into our discussion. So that's the way I think I'd prefer to proceed.
Good.
Anything else for right now?
No, nothing else for right now for me.
I'm good.
Okay, we are wrapped up then. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Randy. Thanks, everyone.